Now, very interesting, because if you watched Autumn Watch from the BBC last year, you'll have seen some red deer there in Scotland. And a scientist from the University of Edinburgh, which is Liska Crook, has been studying them, and they're helping her to rewrite, I suppose, some of the scientific textbooks. Liska, what have you found by looking at these deer?
Well, what we've found is that the genes that make a successful male do not always make a successful female.
What does that actually mean?
So successful fathers, those who sire many offspring, will have daughters who actually have relatively lower breeding success.
Because Darwin would have had us think that as you breed populations, then you get survival of the fittest, and so everyone should get better as time goes on.
Exactly, but what our results are suggesting is that maybe the idea that some genes are better than others, that we can have a single measure of fitness, may just be too simplistic, and that it may depend on the sex of the individual animal carrying the genes.
So when you look at a male deer, for instance, what makes a good male is going to have big muscles, big antlers for fighting, that kind of thing. Those genes wouldn't help a female very much. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. There are very different traits that contribute to breeding success in males, as you say, fighting ability and antler size, and also their skills at roaring. As anyone who watched Autumn Watch will have seen, they spend a lot of time during the mating season.
Does this apply to football hooligans as well?
They well do. But those are very different traits from those the traits that determine breeding success in females. With females, those who produce the most number of calves across their lifetime will have the highest fitness, highest breeding success.
How did you actually do the study and find these results?
Well, we have data from more than 30 years of very intensive study of this population of red deer. And as anyone who saw Autumn Watch will have seen, we can recognise all the individual deer in the population.
Have they got names?
It is an entirely wild population.
Have you named them?
We do have names for every animal in the population, yes.
And your favourite?
Oh, well, there was Caesar on Autumn Watch, as people will have seen.
That's a kind of dog food, isn't it?
and many other attributes as well. There have been some very successful females along the way as well. Aphrodite was one with a very nice name, too.
She was very popular with the males, presumably.
She did very well, yes.
So why is it that the males have unfit daughters? Why does the same work in the reverse direction? Do you end up with females that are very, very successful and they have lots of offspring? Are their offspring in the same way as the males' daughters are compromised? Do the female sons compromise then?
It's slightly more complicated when you look at it that way around, because with females, they contribute not only their genes to their offspring's later performance, but they also provide maternal care. So in the red deer, all that the males contribute to their offspring are the genes. With females, they provide both genes and maternal care. So a good quality female, although she may be passing on genes that are detrimental in a son, in a male offspring, she will also provide very high quality maternal care to both her daughters and her sons. And those two effects seem to balance each other out when you look at the performance of the offspring of the females. So we don't quite pick up the same relationship in relation to mothers' offspring performance.
So what would you say the bottom line is with this study, that because of these effects you've found that actually this mechanism contributes actually to a huge amount of genetic variation and diversity in a population?
Yeah, I mean, it's intuitively a very appealing explanation for a lot of the biological diversity that we see in nature. And this is important because the genetic differences that we see between individuals within a single species have always actually been quite a puzzling fact for evolutionary biologists, because as you mentioned, the process of natural selection is expected to favour only the best adapted individuals, Darwin's survival of the fittest. But what we're suggesting is that maybe this idea of a single fittest genotype is a bit too simplistic.
Liska, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
That's Liska Crook from the University of Edinburgh with the BBC's Autumn Watch deer crop, if you like, which have helped her to effectively rewrite the scientific textbooks in terms of her understanding of how genetics and evolution work.
And now don't forget our teaser question for today. If you want to win a copy of Chris's book, The Naked Scientist, then all you've got to do is give us a call and tell us how many cigarettes are smoked every day worldwide.
Coming up in a second, we'll be hearing from Richard Van Norden from Chemistry World about how you can quit the cigarette packet. He's got some interesting anti-smoking strategies up his sleeve. And also, how chemistry can help you to look years younger. What's all that about? Also, we'll be finding out about bananas and ripe fruit in just a second.
Time now to cross the Atlantic and join our friends Bob and Chelsea for this week's Science Update.